Chapter 45. Dawn had come and gone with Jesse Stone behind his desk. His folded garment bag lay across the top of his packed suitcase by the office door. He picked up the ballistics report on the weapon he'd retrieved at the crime scene for the third time in the last hour, reading through it, looking for something that he knew wasn't there. Proof the dead man was Mr. Peepers. He'd been right about the gun. It was Peepers 22, all right. And, as he suspected, it had been recently fired. But Jesse felt empty of pride or satisfaction. The bullets matched those found in all the shot-out tires, including the one from 2 days ago, and the slugs retrieved from the victims in Salem. Peepers' prints were on the handle of the Smith & Wesson. They were on the barrel, the trigger guard, the clip, and the ammo. He might as well have had the words "Praying Mantis" engraved on the side of the barrel, or bought space on a highway billboard to announce the weapon was his. Even in the absence of irrefutable evidence, Jesse supposed he would have felt better about being right if the two other reports on his desk aligned in a consistent manner. But they just didn't. None of the slugs the state CSU had dug out of his Explorer were a match for Peepers 22. The bullets that had been shot through Jesse's windshield and side-view mirror had been 45s. The windshield slug had been recovered from, of all places, his spare tire. The irony wasn't lost on him. Unsurprisingly, the rest of what had been recovered from the Explorer were buckshot pellets. A shotgun, a 45, a pipe bomb. It didn't fit. And then there was the preliminary report on the envelope dropped at the front desk. That made less sense than the two ballistic reports. Except for Alicia's fingerprints, there were no other prints on the outside nor the inside of the envelope. Yet Alicia couldn't recall if the man who delivered it was wearing gloves or not. He must have been. The question was why. Why wear gloves to protect against leaving prints on the outside of the envelope when the postcard and photo in the envelope are covered in prints? There was a simple answer to all of the questions, to all of the seeming contradictions, to all of the inconsistencies. Peepers was fucking with them. Jesse in particular. Unlike the 45, the shotgun, and the pipe bomb, that fit Peepers' M.O. like a second skin. He'd wanted to confuse Jesse, to torture him psychologically. Here I am. No, I'm not. I'm here. No, over here. No, over there. Jesse wasn't much of a movie fan. He did like westerns, loved them, but westerns were about as popular as musicals these days. Maybe less so. So it was odd that Jesse should remember a movie he watched when he was a little boy, sick and home from school. It was an old black-and-white movie about the French Revolution. What made it okay was that the Scarlet Pimpernel was kind of like the English Zorro, a foppish dandy by day, hero by night. And as he looked at the three reports on his desk, Jesse mumbled to himself, "They seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven or is he in hell? That damned elusive Pimpernel." He laughed at himself for remembering that. If he had been asked to recite any other poem, he wasn't sure he could do better than "Mary Had a Little Lamb." Then, pulling open his side drawer, he stopped laughing. He reached into the drawer, pulled out the bottle of Tullamore Dew, and placed it on the desk. It really was quite beautiful to look at, and it was calling his name, sure as the gate agent would if he didn't get a move on. Still, Jesse couldn't stop staring at the rectangular bottle with its rounded shoulders, the amber liquid within singing its siren song. Jesse folded. He poured himself two fingers and drank. He felt that delicious burn in the back of his throat, the slow warmth rising in his belly. He preferred Black Label. This would do. The disappointment in his weakness would come soon enough. Peepers, alive or dead, had won at least a single victory. In his surrender, another thought crept into Jesse's mind. It was a thought he had either pushed down or kept at bay during these last weeks. It hit him that Jen was getting married, that the tangled two-step they had done for years was now finally at an end. It hurt. He couldn't believe that it did, but there was no denying it. And regardless of all the hours he and Dix had spent discussing the dysfunction of their marriage and their even more dysfunctional divorce, he felt he had failed. His wrecked shoulder, well, that wasn't on him. Circumstance, misfortune, and the baseball gods were responsible for that. His marriage, though, was something else. He knew Jen was equally responsible, more responsible. He hadn't been the one to cheat. Still, he saw it as his failure somehow. He poured himself another drink. 5 minutes later, he was in the back seat of a Paradise cab on his way to Logan. He didn't bother chatting with the driver. The disappointment was already setting in. That was the folly of alcoholism, he thought. The pleasures of drinking were so short-lived, and the downside lingered at your door forever.